right. Good morning. As was mentioned, my name is Mason McDonald. I've come from Nova Scotia, Canada, to talk to you on a subject that almost seems inappropriate in Hawaii in September. But we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas trees. So this work, just before I jump into what was done, this work was done at the Christmas Tree Research Center at Dalhousie, Nova Scotia, and I did this work with my colleague and friend Raj Lada. So we'll jump into a little bit about Christmas trees. So in Nova Scotia, the predominant Christmas tree species is balsam fir. It's a pretty good species, really preferred by people in the area because of its unique fragrance. So where I'm from, this smell of the balsam fir trees is almost synonymous with Christmas. When you smell that in your house, you know it's Christmas time. Of course, we smell it in our labs 12 months a year. But still, I digress. 99% of all our species for Christmas trees is balsam fir, and most of what we harvest, we actually export. They go as far as Japan, but most of them come to the United States, other than the ones we keep. They're a good needle retainer, but they're not the best. And depending on who you talk to, there'll be some discrepancies on which species people prefer. People in the United States and northeastern United States, if we talk to them, they're really fond of the Fraser firs and will say they're so much better than the balsam firs. And we tend to think the opposite. The problem with balsam fir and any Christmas tree species, because they're losing their popularity due to competition with artificial trees, the problem is that sometimes you get a tree that starts out looking like this, and then unfortunately in a few weeks, maybe it looks like the picture on the right. And even that tree is better than some. Here's a very small one from the labs, and again in a few short weeks, it has almost no needles left whatsoever. And it doesn't matter how hard you try, but if you want to use that tree, it just never quite looks like Christmas. So needle retention is a challenge for the industry. What do we know about needle retention? Probably 7 years ago, we would have said not very much, but there's been a lot of work that we've done anyway, and some other groups on needle retention. And we can say that one of the big factors that seems to be recurring is cold acclimation, so the period of time in which it's harvested. And there's a graph here. This is needle retention in days, so this is the length of time it takes to lose its needles. And trees that are harvested in each month, obviously some that are not of commercial relevance, but just to see what's happening in terms of needle retention, you can see that once you get to the autumn months, October and November, there's almost a twofold increase in needle retention. And that's a pretty consistent response over and over again. We also know that there's a lot of different hormones that are involved. Ethylene has been shown to rise right before abscission. Certain cytokinins and auxins have been linked up with it as well. ABA, of course, linked with cold acclimation. So there's a lot of hormonal factors. But we haven't focused a lot on the nutritional side of things, and that's what I've brought today to talk about. So nutritional management is not necessarily a really high concern for the producers. Basically, if you talk to the producers, they'll tell you that they just come once in a while and dump some nitrogen on it and go on their way. There's been no real care for micronutrients or anything else. And we have no idea, really, the impact of them. So the objective for this study was to, again, identify some seasonal changes in post-harvest characteristics, try to determine the changes in soil and tissue nutrition, and then just draw some linkages between those characteristics. So it's a bit of a preliminary study in that sense. Basically, 18 branches were harvested each month, and needles were collected at the same time for nutrient analysis. We collected soil samples around the base of each tree, and then the branches were evaluated for four key post-harvest characteristics. The number one that we work with is needle abscission or needle retention. However, other important ones include water uptake, moisture content, and then chlorophyll fluorescence. I don't actually mention much about chlorophyll fluorescence here. It's a great parameter, but I didn't bring that information with me. So what's happening here? These are the needle retention curves for this experiment. In the blue is something called needle abscission commencement. It's the length of time required for 1% of the needles to drop. We use that as an indicator that needle abscission process has begun. You'll always lose a few needles. It's just the nature of it. But once 1% starts, it seems to be committed to the process. The green line is needle retention duration, so that's the length of time for 100% needle loss. So you can see the difference here between these two. So we're looking at, you know, a period of maybe 15 days that it could take to begin and then complete abscission. And we see, of course, the exact same thing that I mentioned before, where needle retention is improved in the autumn months. So that's not really new information for us, but it's still useful to start with. This is the critical value for water uptake. There's been a linear response for the commencement of needle abscission once water uptake falls below 0.5 milliliters per gram per day. So we use that as a critical value. And then for moisture content, what seems to happen is when you cut down a tree, initially it's between 57 and 60% moisture by the fresh weight. And as it dries, or as it's post-harvest, I guess it's been cut, that moisture seems to remain fairly high, above 50% anyway. Once it hits 50%, it then decreases exponentially. So we've used 50% as sort of that critical value. And I guess really the point is that, once again, you see those critical values improved in the autumn as well. So that's what's happening post-harvest. Now we'll look at some of the different values in the soil and tissue. So I'm not going through all of them. We've looked at some of the differences here between the months, but since I'm going to be relating these to the post-harvest characteristics, mainly needle retention, we'll look at the ones that were most highly linked. So organic matter and cation exchange capacity were both linked. You can see these graphs. Hopefully it's clear out there, but the purple and dashed line is the needle abscission commencement, and then the green solid line is the needle retention duration. So both organic matter and cation exchange capacity with a positive relationship, R-squared values of between 0.2 and 0.3. So not bad, but it's really the first time that we've demonstrated any sort of relationship there. In terms of your soil nutrition, again, measured a whole host of different minerals here. Three of them emerged to have significant relationships with needle retention: calcium, aluminum, and manganese. Up in the top left-hand corner, that's calcium. Calcium's an important one I'm going to talk a little bit more about later. Probably is the key mineral that's been identified in this study. But it's got a strong positive relationship between 0.3 and 0.4 R squared. Aluminum, one of the only factors that had a negative relationship, presumably some level of toxicity associated with that. And balsam fir forests are known for their very low pH, which makes aluminum more mobile. And then manganese had another very strong positive relationship that I really can't tell you that much about because we're still exploring that. Finally, the needle tissue itself, again, measured a whole host of different minerals. Three more emerged as significant: nitrogen, calcium, and iron. The fact that calcium appeared in both of those was of importance to us. But in the top left-hand corner, again, is nitrogen. Very strong relationships to needle retention, positive relationship. Probably good based on how the producers have been fertilizing their fields. Basically only on nitrogen. Calcium, this was the strongest individual relationship with R-squared values above 0.5. So that was, again, seemingly important. Calcium has been shown to delay senescence and abscission processes in several different species. Usually it's talked about as sort of a pre-soak or a spray. It's been shown to delay the response to ethylene. So it kind of makes sense that it could be involved in this with balsam fir, but again, it's not something that's been studied before. And then at the bottom, also a strong relationship between iron and needle retention. So, like I say, what kind of things do we really pull out of this? It's a bit of a preliminary study because we're just taking a broad spectrum look at everything and see what sticks right now. Organic matter and cation exchange capacity were interesting parameters that were shown to have positive relationships. Nothing like that has ever controlled or been evaluated in the balsam fir orchards. Calcium was the only mineral that was found in the tissue and soil. It had the strongest relationships in both. It's an important cofactor to a lot of different processes. It's delayed senescence. That's probably one of the keys to look at going forward. And then the other factors, of course, need to be explored as well. I throw my speculation on aluminum. I don't have much right now on manganese and iron. But again, strong relationships. We don't know the nature of these relationships, whether or not there is any cause and effect. So where we'd like to go with this is to start exploring that. So it would be great to start looking at some nutrient management strategies and then evaluate the changes that may occur in the needle retention for those orchards. So I just take a minute here to thank the host of sponsors and the research center that I was able to work with. That's really all I have. So thank you very much for getting up first thing in the morning in Hawaii to come here. And are there any questions, if I have any time? We've gone through quite a few different growth regulators. At last count, I think we were probably getting close to 100 different compounds that we were screening through. One of the things is I'm a little restricted in what we're allowed to say about those processes due to IP things. We have a cooperative agreement with the producers, but there's a number of plant growth regulators that are very effective. We've been able to delay needle abscission by at least 100%. Not necessarily with a plant growth regulator by itself, but sometimes in conjunction with some other factors. And we've also developed two new technologies that are being considered for patent, so the formulas. And again, we're looking at probably 150% improvement in needle retention. Yep. I would say that's sort of been in the exploration stage right now. The nature of our funding was exclusively for balsam fir. We've certainly spoken to some of the other key groups. Washington State has a good group that deal with. I think they usually deal with like Nordman fir. So we are just now kind of looking at that to see which ones could also maybe benefit from some of those technologies. Fraser's likely because it's the closest relative to balsam fir. But like you say, people are using spruce, pine, Douglas fir from out west. So there's a lot of different species depending on where you go.
Thank you.